Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. Federal subsidies for rural air travel will continue through at least mid-November, despite the government shutdown. That's according to a notice from the Transportation Department telling air carriers that it's found enough funding to continue paying essential air service subsidies through November 18th. The Transportation Department previously said it had enough funding to continue the program through November 2nd. Today's notice pushes that back about 2 weeks. Essential air service subsidies are meant to ensure airlines serve small rural communities, even if flights aren't necessarily profitable. They provide nearly $600 million each year to support more than 170 routes across the country. More than a third of them are in Alaska. Some airlines that fly subsidized routes in Alaska said earlier this month that they would continue service even if funding temporarily ran dry. But they stress that subsidies are vital to their ability to fly those routes on an ongoing basis. The shutdown has stretched out nearly a month now, and it's the second longest in U.S. history. Republicans and Democrats have yet to come to an agreement to end it. And though the federal government has so far been able to keep essential air service funded, the Trump administration has declined to provide alternative sources of funding for some other programs. Funding for the much larger Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, is set to run out on Saturday. Some Democratic-led states have sued to force the Agriculture Department to continue paying SNAP benefits using emergency funds. This is KTOO. I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. The state's plan to build a new ferry terminal north of Juneau has sparked some calls for more information about the project and what justifies it. The state recently released an economic analysis to that effect, but at least so far, the report hasn't done much to ease concerns, particularly among members of a key oversight board. The Alaska Desk's Avery Elfelt reports.
The Alaska Department of Transportation released the project's economic analysis in mid-October. It paints a picture of the so-called Cascade Point Ferry Terminal as a project with more pros than cons, especially in the long term. The document highlights the terminal's potential to reduce costs, ease regional travel, and boost mining. But that framing drew sharp criticism from members of the Alaska Marine Highway Oversight Board during a meeting last week.
In a very candid response, it read to me like a timeshare brochure. I don't think it was realistic, and I'm not sure where they got some of their numbers.
That was board member Bob Hortover. He was among those who argued the document looks more like an advertisement for the project than an analysis of it. Board Chair Winnetta Ayers echoed that point during the meeting and a follow-up interview. She says it seems like the analysis aims to, quote, build a case for Cascade Point, as opposed to evaluating it against alternative options.
I don't believe it makes a strong case. Certainly from a customer service standpoint and very marginally from an economic standpoint, that the project is justifiable.
That's concerning, she said during the meeting, given that there's a long list of other ferry-related projects in need of funding.
The difficult part is that capital is already being allocated to this project absent all of those things.
The 45-page report explores potential impacts from the terminal that would shorten the ferry ride between Juneau, Haines, and Skagway. The analysis acknowledges that the terminal would create new infrastructure and maintenance responsibilities for the state, plus that construction costs would surpass savings generated by the project. Another con, that passengers would have to make up for the shorter ferry route by driving, taxiing, or shuttling 28 additional miles outside Juneau. DOT spokesperson Daniel Tessin said in an interview that shortening the ferry route ultimately comes down to saving money for the chronically underfunded ferry system. That's despite potential pitfalls for passengers.
That is what we're focused on, is creating these shortened ferry distances, because that's how we're able to continue reducing the cost of operations.
The analysis also lays out a long list of benefits. In the near term, it says shortening the ferry run would reduce emissions and operating costs while also improving reliability. On the whole, the report acknowledges that the idea presents challenges when considered on its own. It notes that, quote, extensive capital costs are difficult to justify based on savings alone. The project's real value, the analysis underscores, comes from other long-term possibilities. Here's Tessin again.
Cascade Point in this terminal, it's not an on its own project. And what I mean by that is there is a bigger plan.
That bigger picture has two main prongs. First, regional economic development by way of mining. The analysis says the new terminal would serve as a major logistical boon for the proposed new Amalga Gold Project. The second prong is another controversial DOT effort known as the Chilkat Connector Feasibility Study. The agency is assessing what it would take to build a road that would, at least in theory, ease travel between Skagway, Haines, and Juneau. Cascade Point, the analysis notes, would be a foundational component of that effort. Reporting in Haines, I'm Avery Alfelt.
And the University of Alaska Anchorage kicked off its new school psychology master's program this fall to address a shortfall in school psychologists. But the program has so far failed to get approval from the State Board of Education over concerns about social justice advocacy. That can make it harder for students to get jobs after they graduate. KTOO's Jamie Deep reports.
Alaska has very few local school psychologists. They're trained to evaluate students to see if they qualify for special education services and provide mental health support. But very few work directly for school districts. To fill the gap, UAA professor Hattie Harvey says districts contract with school psychologists instead.
So that often looks like someone from Lower 48 coming up 2 to 3 times a year for special education testing, which is a very small percentage of the capacity of the role of a school psychologist they could provide.
Alaska is one of two states that didn't have an in-state school psychology program. Harvey spearheaded efforts to launch the state's first program at UAA. The goal is to train school psychologists locally in a state where they currently serve more than 3 times the national recommended average of students. But the first cohort of students might struggle to find work immediately after graduating because of licensing requirements. Harvey says state law requires school psychologists to get their license to work in the state in a couple ways.
They can graduate from a NASP accredited program, which is the National Association of School Psychologists. It's the one accrediting and the only accrediting body for school psychology programs across the nation. And then the second way is graduating from a state approved program.
Harvey says the university is in the accreditation process. The earliest they can achieve accreditation is in 2029, which is a year after the current cohort is expected to graduate. The State Board of Education makes a decision on approving the program in order for students to be able to get licensed through the state. But the board voted down the approval earlier this month and asked the university to make changes based on their feedback. Students still have an option to apply for a national certification after graduating that would allow them to get licensed in the state. But Harvey says the process is much longer than the other two pathways. That can mean students would have to wait a year after graduating before being hired by a district. Board member Catherine McCollum was one of the members who voted against approval. She said at the meeting she was concerned about an article from a sample syllabus that focused on social justice, as well as the structure of the program.
I really do know that we need school psychologists, and I do appreciate the work that they do in the schools. I don't want a program that is designed to create basically activists.
She says she was concerned the program could become overly political or divisive. Sally Stockhausen chairs the board and voted in favor of the program. She's the special education director for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School District and says school psychologists need to learn about social justice as part of their education.
I would much rather us educate and have graduates leave who know what's out there rather than remove all exposure to these thoughts.
Social justice and advocacy is a part of a framework for practicing school psychology as laid out by NASP. Emily Wendling is a school psychologist for the Anchorage School District and the state's delegate for NASP. She says social justice plays a big role in her daily work, which is largely about supporting student mental health and making sure they have equitable access to education.
A part of that is making sure that we are understanding social justice and helping to prevent barriers or address barriers to students' education and create equitable opportunities for all of our students.
Megan Beattie is one of the students in the new program and works as a special education teacher for the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. Beattie says the program has already helped her work as a teacher, where she spends her day advocating for her students.
I advocate for my students all day, every day, whether it's working with my co-teachers and trying to get accommodations in place for my students that have special education needs, or if it's working with our counseling department to make sure that my kids' mental health needs are met. Sometimes it's even literally just getting them fed.
She says it's been frustrating to see the board vote down the program.
Yes, we're exposed to different ideologies. We're exposed to different research methods. But ultimately, our job is to advocate for our students and meet their best needs. And so having one article that came up as kind of a primary reason for not approving the program as a whole was really frustrating.
Beattie says she hopes the board will approve the program at its next meeting. She says she wants to stay in the state to continue to support students.
This is home, and Alaska can sometimes get the short end of the stick on resources and everything anyways. So to be able to give back to the state that has raised me and given me the opportunities that I have had in life is really important for me.
The state board is expected to meet again in December. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
And John Boyle, commissioner of the Alaska Department of Natural Resources, abruptly resigned from his position on Friday. The Alaska Beacon reports that Governor Mike Dunleavy announced the appointment of Boyle's deputy, John Crowther, as acting head of the agency, which regulates Alaska's agriculture, mining, oil, and gas. The governor's office declined on Monday to answer questions about the resignation. Boyle's departure follows those of Revenue Commissioner Adam Crum and Attorney General Treg Taylor. Both are now Republican candidates for governor, and their resignations were announced in advance, unlike Boyle's departure. Boyle could not be reached for comment on Monday. The departing commissioner has extensive experience in the oil industry. Before joining Dunleavy's cabinet in 2023, he was a lobbyist for BP and oil research. This is KTOO. Thank you so much for tuning in.